Welcome to Hustle and Motivate, presented by JokerMag.com. On this podcast, I chat with real-life underdogs in the world of sports, entertainment, and more. We focus on their mindset, how they got started, what they're up to now, and how they overcame adversity on the path to greatness. I'm here with Corey Taylor. Corey was born with a severe facial deformity and has spent the last 30 years of his life inspiring others and showing them that you can overcome any obstacle put in front of you. This is a man who's been through a heck of a lot more than most people and has kept a positive attitude the entire way. He's an inspiration to me, and I'm really excited to have him here to tell his story. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Oh, thank you for having me. Good introduction. Now you got me all cocky. I'm like,
So first, for our listeners that might not have ever come across you, could you give them a little background on your story and who you are?
Sure. Well, like you said, I was born with a severe facial deformity. What that was basically when I was born, my cranium and my face was not formed properly. The casing that held my skull, my brain, was caving in. I had basically no nose, although there was no bone structure. There was just two pinholes, and my left eye was so underdeveloped that I'm completely blind in the left eye. And growing up, all you saw was like the red tissue behind the eye, because as for the eye, all there was like a little white pebble. So once I hit 1920, I finally got a glass eye, which for me, that was the biggest thing ever. But yeah, so I was born, like I said, with that deformity, and I had over 50 surgeries to reconstruct my nose and to fix my head and just different things like that. And as I got older, it was, you know, I was a normal, you know, a normal kid. I watched pro wrestling, played with my cousins, and I picked on my sister. Like, I was a, you know, typical, you know, kid. And just, you know, I was just going to the hospital every other week or so. But for me, that was just a part of life. As I got older, when I hit my 20s, I was going to college. And I was not feeling it. It just wasn't for me. And one day coming home, I got a call that my grandmother had a massive stroke. And my grandmother, my mother, and my father have all been my rocks. Growing up, I always had them. And when I say always had them, I mean growing up, I was very sheltered where one of them were always with me, except for in school. And I actually have a story about that later. But growing up, they were always with me. So having my grandmother, who was not your normal big milk and cookie, you know, big cookies, have cooking and milk grandmother. This is a woman who turned a two-bedroom trailer into a three-bedroom, two-bath house.
Wow.
She did it all herself. And what she didn't do herself, people helped her, because she would do anything for anybody. So for her to have a stroke where she wasn't able to be mobile, wasn't able to speak, for her it was very hard. So me, my mother, and my aunt all worked together to make it as easy for her as possible. And 3 years after that, my mom went out for the night. She came home, and we had cabin fever, and we were just like bickering back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it was nothing serious. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I hate you too. It was just like, she was like, Corey, stop. Okay, fine. Corey, I mean it. Uh-huh. Corey, I'm getting the last word. Sure, uh-huh. And she's like, why don't you go home for the night? And I'm like, wait, no, I was kidding. And she's like, no, not because of that, a-hole. She's like, just because I give you a night out, give you, you know, time away. Because being a caregiver full-time can be it can be a toll on you. So she was like, just go home for the night, come back at 8 a.m. so I can go to the gym, and we're good. So I was like, okay. Went home for the night. My dad ended up coming over. We watched a few movies. And the next day, 7:59, I headed back to my grandmother's house. I walked in and found my grandmother in a wheelchair. Or, I'm sorry, tipped over in her wheelchair. And my mother was in the other room on the floor. My mother had a massive stroke, and my grandmother was trying to get help and fell out of her wheelchair. So basically, I saw my two rocks in the most vulnerable situation you could ever find your heroes. And I spent 8 years basically taking care of them. My grandmother passed away last July. My mom, who the doctor said was going to either die or be a vegetable, is now able to walk. She's pretty much able to do, you know, normal activities as far as like in the house. She can't drive or anything like that, and her speech is a little rough. But for someone they said was going to either die or be a vegetable, she's doing phenomenal.
Wow.
And so while I was taking care of them, while I was working on my writing career, and while working on my writing career, I kind of just been doing different things, motivational speaking, and just right now I'm trying to find a full-time job, hopefully in writing, because my goal right now is this year to get into a place of my own. So that is my story. Hope I didn't ramble too much.
No. And we were talking about it before the podcast, just, you know, what it was like growing up, you know, with facial differences and stuff like that, and just being different from the other kids. What was that like for you?
Growing up, it wasn't horrible. Living in a small town, I know a lot of people think it's a curse, but for me, it was a blessing because I live in an area where my whole street was family, friends, people that knew me. And going into school, it was from grade school until high school, the majority were kids that I knew all the way through. And any of the kids I didn't know, the school ended up doing something that was really smart. Before I entered, I went from sixth grade to junior high, and they went to all the other sixth grade classes in other schools that were about to enter that junior high and show them a video about me where I did like a little interview type thing. And, you know, as a kid, I was just having fun, and they kind of saw that I was just like them. And then when I entered high school, they did the same thing. And I think that was a great way to kind of introduce people to me.
Yeah.
Only bad thing was I hear, "Hey, Corey, hey," I have no clue who that was, which happens a lot. But
it's not a bad problem to have, though.
No, and that's why one thing I love about my hometown is everybody knows me, and if I don't know them, they know me. So I can be walking down the street and have a mugger come up to me, ready to, you know, pull a gun out. Oh, hey, Corey, you can go. You're good. But that's just, you know, that's just the way that I've always been. Where I've always been the type of person that anybody can talk to. But once I hit my teenage years, I kind of felt like everybody was just being nice to me. I didn't think they actually cared. I thought, oh, they just pity me. But years later, I realized that's not the case. And there were actual medical reasons for that train of thought.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get into that. Yeah. But first, I looked on your website and you were talking about, you know, the benefits of being different. What do you think are the benefits of not being like everyone else?
You have a different outlook as far as the way of the people around you. I feel like me, for example, I am very, I guess the term would be empathic, where I can literally get into a car with someone and they can be all cheery, "Hi," and I'm just like, "What's wrong?" "Nothing. What's wrong?" God, I hate when you do that. I have a way of reading people, and I credit that to, you know, one of the things I credit it to is being born different, because when you're born with a facial difference, everybody looks, everybody makes their assumptions, but you get an interesting view of other people. You get to see the true, you get to see people without their masks, ironically. And that's one of the, you know, the best things is that you have a more open-minded view of people and those around you. You don't think about, for example, and I hope this is okay to talk about, I'm not sure, but people are so, into, talking about, how, it's wrong to be, I'm going to give an example, how it's wrong to be gay, stuff like that, where I was always, you know, because of being born with a facial difference and almost dying 4 or 5 times, I've always been the type, you know what, live and let live. If you really don't like that, then don't approach it. Me, I'm always going to tell you that everybody is equal. And that's how I've always been. But one of the best things, I do have to say, I have to do a quick wrestling reference here. One of the best things is going to meet and greet. And meeting a wrestler for the first time, or finding him on Facebook first and talking to him. And then going to meet like another meet and greet, months or years later, and having them be like, "Oh, hey, Corey," and I'm like, "They know me. They know me. Yeah. That's so cool." I've met there's a wrestler, Matt Hardy. I've met him five different times, and every time I meet him, it's, "Hey, Corey," and that's just the coolest thing in the world.
That really is awesome.
Yeah, so that's those are some of the benefits of being born with a facial difference.
So you referenced it before, but when you were around, 18 or 19, you mentioned that you started this kind of struggle. So how did you push through those times and, pull yourself off the ground?
I'm not going to lie to you. It was the hardest thing I ever had to do. I basically just hit this phase of depression where I just felt like lower than everybody. I felt like I was always tired. Basically, all the symptoms of depression, where I was sleeping all the time. I had my head down in school because I didn't think anybody wanted to talk to me. I figured I would look in the mirror and not feel like the person I was the person looking back at me. And I always kind of thought, oh, okay, it's because I have a facial deformity. That's why I feel that way. And it just got to a point where there would be times where I would go into the kitchen, look at the medicine cabinet, look at the silverware drawer, and actually have a plan about how I would end it all. I would literally have the plan, but I didn't, in my mind, I didn't even have the motivation to do it. Not because I didn't want to, just because I had such a lack of energy, a lack of focus, a lack of motivation. I couldn't even do it. And because I knew if I did, my mother and grandmother would not be far behind and they would have kicked my ass in heaven if I did.
Yeah.
But it just got to a point where I finally, after years of struggling, I turned to my mom and I finally told her, I was like, "Mom, if I don't get help, I will not be here in a year." And I told her outright, I told her I knew how I was going to do it if I did not get help, because I knew something was not right with me. So I went to a doctor and they did a bunch of labs. And at the time they put me on antidepressants because they were figuring, okay, it might be depression. So while they waited for the lab, they started me on that. And next thing you know, about a week later, my testosterone level, which should have been between 400 to 1,000, depending on who you are, mine was in double digits, low double digits, 30s to 40s. So finding out there was actually something wrong with me was actually a blessing, because I felt like just finding out, it was like I felt so relieved. And then once I started getting testosterone treatment, where I was getting shots and stuff like that to give me the testosterone I needed, I felt like a new man. I felt truly like a different person. I was more outgoing. I was more, I felt more confident. I felt the person I saw in the mirror was finally me. And I like to always bring that up because, people talk about mental health and they think of stuff when they see someone who's depressed or suicidal, they think immediately things like bipolar, they think of severe depression. They don't realize that the hormone level, somebody's hormone level can have just as big of an effect, if not more, on their mental state than other things.
Yeah, and that's something I've actually read about recently. It's just as a society, testosterone levels are at an all-time low. And I'm not really sure what the cause of that is, but that could be a reason why, depression is so rampant nowadays.
Yeah. And I still see a counselor and a psychiatrist just for my own, just for my own well-being, just because if I ever have stuff going on at home, it's always good to have someone to kind of run things by. Just be like, am I crazy? Am I wrong here? And have them be like, well, you could do this differently. Or have them be like, no, you're definitely right. Just someone to kind of run things through. And I've told them repeatedly about this because I want to make sure that anybody who goes through there, they check their labs. And I know that's something that they probably check. But for me, I'm very scared that there are people that are, quote, slipping through the cracks that could very well have a hormone issue going on, and they're labeled bipolar or they're labeled depressed and suicidal, and they're just thrown away and, you know, tossed away the key. And I don't know if that's the case, but that's something that I've always been very, ever since this happened, it's something I've always been very fearful about, because I can't even be, I came very close to not being here today. I can't tell you how close I came. And the thing that other people can be going through that and not knowing it, because let me tell you, that's the worst part, is having, feeling this way and having people say, oh, you're just going through puberty. No, this is not what puberty feels like. And that was like trying to get through to people and make them realize that this was not puberty. This was not normal.
So I was checking out another interview you did where you spoke about the movie Wonder. Obviously a critically acclaimed film. A lot of people loved it. And it kind of brought facial differences to the forefront where, you know, it was being discussed by a lot of mainstream media outlets. I know you spoke about your opinion of the film. What are some realities that the movie overlooks?
One of the biggest things it overlooked, and I get it because of the demographic, they were going for more of a PG, kid-friendly demographic, but they talk about his surgeries, but they don't explore that. Like, I feel like if they explored him going through a facial reconstructive surgery, it could have shown more of the authenticity of what he's going through, where his mindset would be, what his parents are going through, what his sister was going through. Because a lot of times at that age, because he was like, what, 8, 9 years old in the movie? Mm-hmm. At that point, like, I know I wasn't really thinking about much about, oh no, what's the outcome going to be? It was always like, okay, get a needle, go to sleep, wake up, I get a wrestling figure. Like, I never really thought much about, you know, what the outcome was until much later. But the parents and the family of kids with facial differences, the surgery is the most anxious, anxiety-ridden, horrifying experience that they could go through. Because for all they know, he's not coming out of it.
Yeah.
And that is petrifying. And I think if they explored that a little, they could have had a little more of an impact. And I think they kind of went more, like, it was a little too family-friendly for my taste. So for me, I always feel like whenever I watch it, or like I'll try and pick up the book and read it, my thought is always, oh, my story is better.
Yeah.
And that's also the writer in me who's like, just write it, damn it.
Are you planning on doing something like that?
I dabbled in writing my autobiography about 6 months ago, but it wasn't what I wanted it to be. So right now I'm working on something. Some of it is inspired by real life, and some of it is obviously creative freedom. But the way I refer to it is, it's Wonder meets 50 Shades of Grey. Wow. Now think of that combination right there and tell me that's not intriguing. Yeah. But that's
I'm really curious now.
Yeah, aren't see? When you compare them two books like that, people can't help but be like, huh, how is that going to work?
So at Joker Mag, we're all about the underdog mentality and, you know, kind of mastering your mind. And we were talking about this before the interview, but, you know, you're a guy who's been through it all. Obviously, you managed to keep a positive outlook on life. So in general, how important do you think your mindset is in overcoming adversity?
You have to almost accept the fact that there are some ignorant people in the world, but not everybody is ignorant. You have to understand that everybody is different. And especially being born with a facial difference, I feel like you can understand, like, you know, someone born with a facial difference can understand that more than anybody. You know, but when you have people being ignorant to you, you start to get the mindset that everybody's like that or everybody thinks that way. But you forget that there are just as many good people as there are negative. And you can't let the negative mindsets of others get to you. And it's all about energy. Like, if you keep a positive energy, you stay, like, you stay positive, you have positive thoughts, you just can't let all that negativity affect the way you think, because it's not your problem, it's theirs. And that is the best way I can go, you know, I can say it, is you can't let their issues affect you, because it really is them, it's not you. It doesn't matter if you're born with a facial difference, one arm, one leg, It doesn't matter what your story is. You have people who are ignorant to you. It's not because of your issue. It's because of their issues. And once you get that mindset and you accept that, like I said, everybody is different and everybody is different, then you can kind of start focusing on your own mental health and doing things to help make your own energy positive and you make yourself more confident.
And kind of just staying, like looking at yourself, I've always thought of it as like you're a boat going through the ocean, and the ocean is like other people's negative energy, their negative comments, negativity, and you just got to keep from letting that water in and sinking your boat.
Exactly. And there will be some storm that you have to go through. But as long as you keep your head up high, you'll get to the other side.
Definitely. So I like to ask all my guests this. So if everything you've done in your life, if you had to pick one thing, what's the one thing you're most proud of?
Oh, man. All right. Another story. Fair warning. So like I mentioned before, I'm a writer. And I have been writing since I was 8 years old. One day I was in the cafeteria or in the library at school reading R.L. Stein, who wrote the Goosebumps series, the Fear Street series. He wrote a book, Say Cheese and Die, about a camera that basically it took a picture and it made it so, like, and the pictures were cursed. And those pictures would always happen, like a car accident would happen or, you know, different things like that. And I read this book, and there was one scene where they were in like someone's backyard in the middle of the night. And next thing I know, the bell rings, and I like get jolted back to reality. And I look around, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm not in that backyard. I'm in school." And it was like instantly, like, "Oh, I want to do that. I want to take people out of their world and bring them into mine." And next thing I know, I just started writing from there. And R.L. Stein was the reason I started. Without finding his books, I don't know if I ever would have picked up a pen or, well, a keyboard. But you get my drift. But then years later, while taking care of my grandmother and mother, I went on Facebook. And I just happened to log on when R.L. Stein posted that he would be appearing at Pikes Peak Writers Conference in Colorado Springs. I was like, okay, I don't know how, because I never traveled alone, but I'm going. I have been on a plane once in my life, and it was on a class trip, so I had a lot of support there. This was going to be the first time I ever traveled alone, but I was going to do it. But whenever I think, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that, back then I would always come up with reasons why it wasn't possible, and it would end before it even began. This time, within an hour, I found coverage. Someone to watch my mother and grandmother when my aunt worked. I found it ended up being around my birthday. So I got my mom and my dad. I was like, you know, can you just give me money toward the trip? And I got them to give me money toward the trip. So I ended up financially okay. I called the airline and I arranged to have special assistants help me to and from the gate, because being visually impaired, I hate traveling when it comes to that. And so, like, I will only do special assistance, because trying to find the gate, I'm looking every way to find it. It does not go well. That's why I hate the train system, but that's for another time. But, so then I end up in Colorado Springs. I'm walking down the hall of the hotel, which is where they're having the conference. Who's walking toward me but R.L. Stein?
Wow.
My heart was racing. I felt like I was going to swallow my tongue, and I was like, you know what? I don't want to bother him. He's probably on his way somewhere. I don't want to think I'm a stalker. Any reason I could think of not to do it, I was thinking about. Until as I'm having those thoughts, I had one thought. Screw that. And I walked toward him. I went up to him and said, Mr. Stein, I just want you to know that you're the reason I started writing. And I just want to thank you for everything you've done for me. More than I could ever even begin to tell you. I have to thank you. And I thought that was going to be it. And I was like, you know what? If that is it, if that's all I get from this whole conference, I'm happy. Next thing I know, before the conference, I had been talking to the person who was arranging it, So I wanted to make sure I knew everything. And I wanted to make sure I knew everything before I got on the plane, because I did not want there to be any surprises. Again, first time traveling, and I'm going across the country. So I end up outside of the conference hall over there having like lunch and dinner, banquet hall, I'm sorry. And outside the banquet hall where they're having dinner, everybody's in line. And the person who arranged the conference, her name's M.B. Parlow. She's another writer. She saw me. She's like, Corey, come with me. My instant thought, you know, because my thought process was like, I did something wrong. So I was like, uh-oh, what'd I do? How could I already have done something wrong? Where's this going? She brings me past the line, brings me into the banquet hall, and sits me down at R.L. Stein's table. I was like, are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? You're not going to get in trouble, are you? And she was like, you're fine. Just chill. You're fine. So next thing I know, R.L. Stein comes in, and a few other fans come in, and I actually got to have lunch with R.L. Stein and his wife and other R.L. Stein fans. And that was amazing. And then that same year, I had finished writing my novel, literally, a week before the conference. So I had my, what they call a query letter, all ready to go in case I met with an agent. So that year, there was an agent there who would tell others, okay, send me a few pages, or, nah, not really for me, and just, you know, kind of like brushing them off. And I believe he made someone cry, if I'm not mistaken. So I was a little, you know, a little nervous, but I ended up having a meeting with him during the conference. I gave him my query letter. He looks at it. He's like, oh, wow. He's like, well, if you want, send me the whole book. I was like, I'm sorry. What did you just say? Send me the book. So I sent him the novel, and it took him 4 months to get back to me. And he ended up saying, you know, it was good. He liked it a lot, but he just didn't love it. And he wanted the person who was my agent to love the book as much as I did, because I see this book as a 3-book series with a bunch of what they call standalones in the series. And he was like, I want someone to see that passion that you see in it. So I respect his answer. And I, like, for my very first rejection, it was not horrible. And I'm still trying to find, I'm still trying to find a publisher or agent that will pick the book up. But I truly believe once it gets picked up, I'm golden. Like, I know for a fact this book is going to go big. I'm talking Netflix big, because inevitably I see it as a Netflix series.
That's an amazing vision too. And just the feedback that guy gave you, I mean, that's encouraging.
Oh, very.
Even if he said no.
Yeah, and you know what? The fact that he didn't like just say, oh, you know, blow me off with, give me a few pages. You know, he asked for the whole book, which means there was obvious interest.
Yeah, so he must have loved the idea behind the book.
Yeah, and like something like, one of my favorite things about the book is every character is, there's no minor characters. Every reader will find someone that they're like, I wonder what happened to them. And that's where I want the standalone books to come in, where you'll kind of like run into people, because it's a small town in the book. I want it to be like a real small town where you see Bob Smith running a store in one book, and then you see Bob Smith obituary in another and be like, oh, Bob died. Like, I want it to be just like a small town where you run into people that you know, I want it to feel authentic, where everybody will either love or hate every character. And that was my goal, and I nailed it. It's my baby, so I'm very, I talk about it like I'm a proud papa.
So getting back to just, I have a few more questions before we wrap this up.
I'm an open book, go for it.
So what's one piece of advice you'd give to someone who's struggling to overcome adversity in their own life?
Stay strong and just remember that there are good people out there. Look for support, because there are family, there are friends that truly do care about you. Not everybody has toxic energy. Not everybody is negative. Just remember that there are people you can lean on. Sometimes it's hard to find those people you can lean on. But I promise you, don't be afraid to lean on someone. And that's one of the most important things, because for the longest time, other than my mother, my grandmother, and my father, I felt like I was in it alone. And like I said before, without them, I would not be here today. So just remember, there are people you can count on and lean on. And just remember that no matter what the difference, no matter what your difference is, whether it be physical or something inside, just remember that you are different, but so is everybody else. Nobody in this world is the same. But your difference doesn't define you. And that's something that you have to remember, that is, your difference does not define you. If you have a dream, do whatever you can to achieve that dream, because no difference you have affects that dream. I had a dream. One of my things was I wanted to either have a documentary made about me or be in a movie. And next thing I know, I get a call from someone who's putting a documentary together about people with facial differences. And now that's actually happening. And just make your dreams come true, because there's nothing stopping you except you. If you work hard, anything you can do, anything you want, you can do.
That's what we're all about, man. Love that message. And that's why I really wanted to have you on to tell your story and, you know, share your mindset, because that's just really powerful stuff.
Thank you. I hope I have an impact.
So before we wrap this up, tell me a little bit about what you're up to these days.
Right now I'm writing a lot. I'm looking for, I'm writing a lot of blogs and articles, and I'm trying to find homes for them. I went to a work readiness program last week for those with visual impairments, and it was such an amazing experience. I can't even begin to tell you how incredible that felt. But I went there, and so they asked, what do you want to do? I'm like, well, realistically, I'm looking at data entry, because I can type 103 words per minute. So I figure data entry is a good way to go. I'm like, but my end-all, be-all would be to be a professional writer. And I'm still looking for, a website to pick me up, or for a publisher to hear my story and be like, hey, you know what? I want all three books. And my goal is I want to make my writing my living. So right now that is what I'm working on. Like I said, I have a documentary that I was asked to be a part of about people with facial differences and their everyday life. And that has gone really, really well. The filming we've done for it has been really, I think it's going to really do well when it comes out. And so I've been doing that, and that's pretty much it, just writing and everything, writing the documentary and just looking for hopefully a full-time writing job so I can get an apartment.
Sounds like you got a lot of great stuff in the works and a lot of good stuff going for you.
I hope so. This is where my frame of mind comes in, where I'm always like, oh, so much has happened. And I'm like, oh, but what if it doesn't? So I'm trying, and I have a friend who kind of, if anytime I'm like, yeah, maybe it's going to happen, maybe not, she punches me. So that's what you need sometimes.
So tell people where they can find you on social media and also your website.
You can find me at Corey, Corey, R, Taylor.com and CoreyT0304@gmail.com. And you can find me on Facebook as well. I believe you'll probably have a spot where you'll have the links posted and everything.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm going to plug that in the article.
But it's facebook.com/CoreyRobertTaylor.
Great. Awesome. Well, Corey, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story. Obviously, your message is so powerful, and I think moving forward, you're going to have such a positive impact on a lot of people. Thanks for coming on, and I'm looking forward to watching the next chapter of your journey.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, or if you learned something new, smash that subscribe button and leave us a quick review. Hustle and Motivate is presented by JokerMag.com, the home of the underdog.